The following program has been pre-recorded.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Community Matters here on 103.7 WEEI. I'm your host, Scott Cardishi. Glad you could join us. Community Matters comes your way each and every Saturday morning and keeps you up to date and in touch with many of the great things that happen in and around our communities right here in the state of Rhode Island, in eastern Connecticut, and in southeastern Massachusetts. And this morning, gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the program former NBC 10 sports guy and president and founder of the World War II Foundation and International Museum, Tim Gray, is with us. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I've been called worse than sports guy. I think it was referred to once as sports donkey. So I don't know where that came from, but I'll take sports guy.
Yeah, no respect for us sports guys.
No, none. Zero.
Well, Tim, you know, we've had you on in the past to talk about the World War II Foundation and International Museum, but as you know, changing audiences, so we may have some people listening this morning that have not heard you on the station or the show in the past. Why don't you explain to our listeners, what is the World War II Foundation and International Museum? Where is it located? What you're all about?
We're down in South Kingstown. The museum is a museum that we started about 9 years ago. It's was just recently ranked as one of the top 10 museums in the world, World War II museums in the world that people should visit by National Geographic. And we have about 7,000 artifacts relating to the war, some, you know, extremely rare. And the museum is a byproduct of the documentary films that we do. We've done about 43 films. They're all narrated by celebrities, everyone from Luke Bryan and Bill Belichick to Kevin Bacon and Paul Giamatti. So, you know, I've been collecting artifacts since I was a kid. And one day my wife said, get him out of the basement, and I want to put a gym downstairs. So you always listen to your wife. And so, you know, you don't want that headache. So so that's what we did. We opened the museum in South Kingstown, and it's just really grown. It's considered the most comprehensive collection of World War II artifacts in the United States right now. We represent all parts of the war from the Soviet side, China, Burma, India, Europe, Pacific, Holocaust, home front, women in war, minorities in war. We just really try to focus on the global picture of what happened back then when about 70 million people died.
Let me ask you this question, because I am a big fan of history and in particular, very intrigued by World War II history. Having said that, I want to know what made you take the leap to do this, to undertake this very big undertaking, creating these documentary films, creating the International Museum. What made you decide in your life that, you know what, I'm going to take this leap of faith and get this done?
You know, I was about 6 years old when I picked up a World War II book and was just fascinated by the personal stories of the war at that time. And, you know, for my 10th birthday, my parents are like, what do you want for your birthday? And I'm like, well, I'd like Edward R. Murrow's broadcast from the London Blitz in 1940. And they're like, don't you want a baseball glove? I'm like, no, I want that. So, you know, I kind of kept that in the background throughout my journalism career, and have always been very, very, very passionate about that time period in history. I like sports. I love what I do now. It's just kind of trying to make a difference in the world. And, you know, World War II isn't really taught in schools much anymore. So our focus, our demographic is like 15 to 45. And we've had about 4,500 students through from Rhode Island and Massachusetts and Connecticut, and we pick up the cost of their bus so the teacher can't say no. And we just want them to know there was a World War II, and that everything that they have today, from their cell phones and their ability to go, you know, check out the mall and order stuff on Amazon or whatever it is because of what that generation went through. And so it's just been a passion of mine that, you know, after 15 years in journalism, as you know, Scott, it's kind of like you have a writing background. What do you want to do with that writing background? And one transferred to the other. And I'm really happy that I made the move.
You know, you mentioned that generation, considered to be by many and certainly me, the greatest generation of all time. And we're close to the point of having no more World War II veterans. We're getting to that point. So to me, that underscores, Tim, how important it has been for you to capture and document many of these stories, right? So that this yep. history can live on after, you know, the last of the many great World War II veterans have passed.
Yeah, to put it in perspective, there were 16 million Americans who served in the war, and today there are about 43,000 still alive, and that's it. And they're all 99, 100 to 106. And so, you know, we've had the opportunity to go back to pretty much all of the places that I've read about World War II as a kid. So we go to these weird islands in the Pacific that nobody's ever heard of, like Guadalcanal and Peleliu and, you know, Iwo Jima they've heard of. But for me, you know, to be able to go back to these places in the Pacific and Europe and do these films and walk around where the battle was fought, sometimes with veterans, it's the most amazing experience because, as you know, sometimes the best interviews are when you just ask them their name and you just let them go, you know, so we're able to go back to these places, whether it be Normandy or even Auschwitz concentration camp with survivors and veterans, and you just relive what they went through their eyes. You're watching their eyes and you don't get in the way of what the stories they're telling you because they're reliving it all again. Things that happened 75, 80 years ago that really left an indelible mark in their life and changed their lives forever. So I think as a journalist, you kind of put a microphone on them. And in the case of our veteran or our survivor we brought back to Auschwitz, we put the microphone on Izzy Arbeiter and we said, okay, Izzy, give us a tour of Auschwitz. What did you do every day? And he just started walking and talking. And it was like just an amazing where we didn't have to ask him any other questions other than that initial question. And it was just an incredible thing to witness somebody reliving the most horrific moments of their life in such vivid detail, you know, 70 years later. And it's the same with veterans. They all can remember the foxhole they were in the Ardennes, and they can't tell you what they had for breakfast, but they can remember where the Germans were and what they were cooking and their foxhole. So it's just ingrained in their minds. And to have them relive it that long ago leaves a story that, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. And we just want young people to understand the signs of anti-Semitism, to understand the signs of a global war, to just be able to nip it in the bud before it becomes a bigger issue like it did in 1939, in the 1930s, really.
You and the organization have received tremendous celebrity support.
Yeah, we're lucky.
And why don't you tell the listeners why you think that is? I know why it is, because I think they feel the same way I do about what you're doing. But why do you think you've had such a great outpouring of support from celebrities who have contributed in many different ways? Among the ways they've contributed is narrating some of your documentaries.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of them. A lot of them had parents who were involved in the war, or they've got a son or a son-in-law or a daughter who were in the service. So most of the people who narrate our films today, you know, have either been in a film like Kevin Bacon or Paul Giamatti about war or World War II or something in the military, or they have a family connection. Like Jim Nance at CBS Sports does a lot of our films, and Jim is very passionate about the World War II generation. His son-in-law is a fighter pilot on a aircraft carrier in the Pacific right now. So a lot of them have a connection to the military or some part of history. And we've just been lucky. Like Luke Bryan's uncle was on a battleship during World War II, so he narrated a film for us on the USS Missouri. You know, they all have a connection in some way and want to give back. Dan Aykroyd is a big World War II fan in terms of learning about World War II. So we try to go to people who have that kind of connection because I think they get it. Anyone who has anybody in their family in the military or has been in the military, whether it's Afghanistan or Vietnam, Korea, World War II, they understand that it's important that these stories are continually told. So we've been really lucky. And Bill Belichick's father was in the Navy in World War II and served in Europe and the Pacific. So Bill understands, and Bill has been a supporter of our efforts. So it's just worked out. It's just been a good relationship, a lot of these people.
Tim, as you and I speak this morning, the Support Wreaths Across America takes place today at noontime. Tell us a little bit about that and your relationship with that.
Yeah, Wreaths Across America, I'm sure people realize when they see Arlington National Cemetery or even the cemeteries in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. This time of year, Wreaths Across America puts wreaths on all of the headstones and the graves, just as a tribute to make sure that these men and women are never forgotten, especially around Christmas time. So we partner with them throughout the year, and a few dollars of every wreath that is sold through Wreaths Across America comes back to help the World War II Foundation as well. So it's just a great relationship that we have with them.
So even though that event takes place, again, as we speak on this Saturday morning, today at noon, is that something people can still donate toward, or is that time passed?
I think the time is pretty well passed. They can go to the Wreaths Across America website and just put in World War II Foundation, and it'll pop up with our page. And yep. I think, you know, by the time that the program airs, we'll hopefully have sold a lot of wreaths, and you'll see a lot of them in the cemeteries around our area.
So let's talk about your website, you know, worldwar2foundation.org. It's www.iifoundation.org. What are some of the things you're looking for? Tim, obviously, I'm sure you'd love donations, whether it's individual donations, support from local businesses. I don't know if you need volunteers. And we've spoken in the past on the air as well. If people listening might have some World War II artifacts, that's something you'd be interested in considering as well, correct?
Yeah, we get a lot of donations. A lot of the times, sons and daughters or grandkids don't know what to do with grandpa's medals or dad's medals or his uniform. So what we try to do when you come down and see the museum, you'll see it's a smaller museum, but it's full. It's every inch is filled with personal items that deal with the war. And what we try to do is learn as much about the story behind the donation, and we'll do a write-up so you can come and visit dad's medals or a mannequin with dad's uniform or something like that, you know, as long as we exist. So we're always looking for things that kind of tell the personal story of the war, because that's what our films focus on, is more of the micro view of the war rather than the macro view of the war. So there were a lot of people, you know, caught up in World War II, and some were combatants and some were witnesses and some were survivors. And we just, you know, we try to tell the personal side, because that's what seems to resonate with younger people. They want to know about people their age who saved the world.
Yeah. So tell us about the museum hours, gift shop, and what can people buy stuff online as well?
Yeah, we have a little small gift shop there. We're open a Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and we're down on Main Street in South Kingstown. So yeah, we're open 5 days a week, and we have a small gift shop with some stuff there to help support the museum. You know, we're not selling tanks or jeeps or B-17 Flying Fortresses or anything, but we have t-shirts and hats and things. But, you know, most of our money comes in from support of our films, and we've got some great corporate sponsors like American Airlines and Bank of America, AM General. They make the Humvees for the military today. And so we've been lucky. Caterpillar's another one. We've been lucky to gain some national traction from our donors and sponsors. And, we just hope to keep that going. And it's a pretty tough economic environment right now. And a lot of nonprofits are struggling just because of the economy, and people are holding back a little bit more in philanthropic giving. So it's a tough time for all nonprofits. So, you know, we're just trying to hold our niche down here and keep it going as long as we possibly can. But we just encourage people to come down, and they can make a donation down there as well. And I, you know, we got a lot of great ratings on Yelp and Google, and it's just a real special place.
And if people listening, you know, maybe a teacher might be listening, or the father or mother of a son or daughter that might be in school, if their classroom wants to come down, do they go to your website? How would they reach out to you to organize that?
Yeah, they go to the website, and we have an email on there, a contact form. And as I said, you know, we've had about 4,500 students through, and we have not had one disinterested student. We have not had one student on their cell phone. It's a very tactile museum. So if you want to touch some of the items, you want to wear a helmet, you want to touch the uniforms, you can, because that's how students learn. Students really learn today visually, and there's enough visually in there, I think, to overwhelm a lot of these students. So yeah, just go to the website and they can contact us, and we'd be happy to get that process moving.
And the World War II Foundation and Museum is also available on social media, right? I think you guys on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter?
We're on TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Wait a sec. You're on TikTok? Are you doing like TikTok videos, Tim Gray dancing on TikTok?
I am not doing that because that is something, you know, I would look like Elaine from Seinfeld if I was doing dancing videos. No, we stay away from anything athletic with Tim. But yeah, we've got a social media manager who understands how young people work, and she does great TikTok videos and Instagram and Facebook. And it's just about getting these younger people interested. And that's the avenue, as you know.
Bringing it back full circle to your introduction when I said, you know, former NBC 10 sports guy. If I'm not mistaken, you were at NBC 10 at the very beginning of the Patriots dynasty.
Yes.
Were you not in the early 2000s?
I was there for the first Super Bowl title in New Orleans, in which was the 2001 season. And right after 9/11, being at the Superdome and just seeing the security there, the helicopters and the barbed wire. And it's one of the memories that's always ingrained is the Patriots. Its first Super Bowl in New Orleans, Super Bowl 36, and just the first major sporting event coming after 9/11 and what that was like. And next year's the 25th anniversary of 9/11, and that's really hard to grasp.
Yeah, you know, I was there as well, and that halftime show with U2, and they scrolled all the names of the victims of the 9/11 attacks. That was just emotional, bone chilling. It really was.
Yeah. I sat in my seat and I watched that, and all the names came up, and it was just it was one of those moments. And Paul McCartney had performed there, and you know, as well, he was there that year. But the U2's performance was just mind blowing, and it was just an amazing tribute.
So I asked this question because here the Patriots are again, and I'm not saying they're going to be another dynasty, but it's amazing. So many fans of football franchises throughout the country, I'm sure, are envious that the Patriots were only down for a few years, and all of a sudden here they are back again with a new coach and a new quarterback that look pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they're a fun team to watch, and I think that's the thing that is most entertaining about them, and the word that comes to mind is they're a fun team. You know, they're fun again, and that's because, you know, Drake May can thread a ball through a needle, but between everybody else on the team, they're just great entertainment again, and I think that's going to continue under Vrabel. He's a great coach, and I just really enjoy watching this team play football.
Well, Tim, always great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Scott.
Again for joining us on the show. And thank you for what you do as the president and founder of the World War II Foundation and International Museum. And happy holidays to you and yours, Tim.
Thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right, Tim Gray, our guest here on Community Matters. My thanks to Tim for joining us. Thanks to my producer, Laura Minicucci. Most of all, thanks to all of you for tuning in. My name is Scott Cardishi. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Community Matters with your host, Scott Cardishi. If your group or organization would like to be part of the show, email us at communitymatters@weei.com.